Welcome to the Effort Bucket, a podcast exploring the realms of cybersecurity and our daily human interactions with digital innovations. I'm Alex Galegos, a systems administrator.
Ashley Keske, cybersecurity specialist.
And I'm Paul Ruffalo, a cybersecurity consultant and teacher.
Paul's intro changes absolutely every week. You're going to run out of intros if you keep this up.
I'll try. We'll see.
Pretty soon it's going to be cybersecurity consultant and Marvel Cinematic Universe enthusiast.
All the things cool.
Yeah.
And or fun.
So this week, our topic is actually suggested by one of our listeners. Tim sent us an email that we were going to respond to at the end of one of our episodes. We usually like to factor in a little time for any messages that people send us, that sort of thing. But these were good enough and we thought big enough topics of discussion that we thought, you know, these probably are enough to be an episode all on their own. And so we decided rather than try to cram our feedback into 10 to 12 minutes at the end of the episode, why not just make a mailbag episode and respond to all of these in a little more detail. So that's what we're going to do. And I think you'll agree that most of these will generate some interesting discussion. At least I hope so. We'll see. So I'm just going to dive right in to Tim's letter, who wrote in that these would be a few possible topics of conversation, not necessarily related to each other. One, he said, how bad will the fallout from Microsoft's recent breach losing their source code get?
It's hard to say exactly how bad it'll get. I think getting a hold of source code in general is just really bad for business. I was reading that they were able to get in through a non-prod test account that didn't have MFA on it. So I think at a minimum, like we all know that those are basic security.
Best practices or controls.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. Like, what is the word I'm looking for? Basic security controls that should be in place.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's always troubling when the criminal is able to get access to the asset and then bring it offline and play with it, you know, in their own sandbox. Because then they can sit there and bang away at it and do whatever they want. So I think we probably won't hear anything from Microsoft about this ever, because it's Microsoft and, you know, that's just kind of how they operate. They try to keep things under wraps. But I think it's, you know, we're going to see things happen months and years down the road that, you know, it might be in the Microsoft OS or their products, directly, but, you know, we're not going to hear anything from them directly. It's just going to be, in the community, in the crowdsourcing side of things. And it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
Do we necessarily believe when Microsoft says they've found no evidence of any customer-facing systems that have been compromised? Do we necessarily believe that that's the case?
I don't think so. I thought there was another article that came out, and I have to track it down now, but I thought some secrets from clients were discovered, because I believe they had to rotate those.
I always find it, I'm immediately skeptical of the statements, the public statements from any corporation after they suffer a cybersecurity incident. And I don't know if I'm right to be skeptical, or if it's just because so many corporations have handled disclosure so poorly over the years. But whenever I see a report that says, don't worry, your data is secure, everything's fine, and this exploit is not being exploited in the wild, I think, I don't know. Am I the only one that feels that way?
I always wonder about scope. Because, you know, when you're forced to disclose, which I think the public is owed, you know, information anytime something happens, especially if you are a public company. Mm-hmm. I would go so far as to say private companies should do the same thing, because if you know, years ago when we first adopted Salesforce, I really appreciated the fact that they have kind of an open policy for, you know, their platform. They have a website called trust.salesforce.com that just shows uptime and all that stuff. And I've always really appreciated how they approach that, and that they have seemingly very good transparency into their environment. But I always worry about scope with disclosures, because these organizations are forced to say something, but if they can massage the message to make it look better than it really is. And you look at how broad Microsoft's environment is. I mean, they could say, yeah, we don't see any evidence, but then they don't qualify what they're talking about. Uh-huh. You know, is it the entire environment? Is it just the identity side of things? Is it just a subset of their hosting? Is it, you know, Office apps? I mean, they have such a broad span that they could scope it any way they want.
Also, how closely is Microsoft looking for evidence of any issues or any sign that their exploits are being exploited in the wild? Mm-hmm. Like, I know just from trying to work with Microsoft in the past how difficult it is to actually get support from Microsoft, get somebody from the company to look at an issue. Like, is it because there's actually no exploitation, or is it because, we haven't found any evidence because we haven't been looking for any and are going to continue to ignore it?
And I don't know if either of you have read the book, This Is How They Tell Me the World Ends. Nicole Pearl Roth, she talks about 0 days and how even for Microsoft, like they have vulnerabilities that they know are out there, but they don't patch. So it's like, how many of those are being exploited that we just will never hear about?
Mm-hmm.
Because Microsoft is everywhere.
Yeah. I think
it's rare to find a company that doesn't have at a minimum Active Directory, unless you're really small.
If you look at the CrowdStrike Global Threat Report the 2024 report, they actually chronicle an attack against Microsoft with a vulnerability that was open in Outlook for a year. Russian-based criminals focused on credential harvesting in 23, primarily exploiting unpatched vulnerabilities in Outlook. And I think that was finally patched in March of 23. So it was like March of 22 through March of 23. Like, how does that just stay open? Especially, it's credentials. that's you know, you mentioned MFA as a baseline, you know, best practice and control. Well, creds are pretty much crown jewels across any environment. Those need to be protected. And how do we let a nation state attacker just whack at it for a year?
Because we might also be using that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in terms of specifically answering this question, how bad will the fallout from Microsoft's recent breach get? I don't know the answer, and I don't think anybody can specifically know the answer without knowing exactly what data was compromised, and what fixes are in place on Microsoft's side, you know, what countermeasures are already coming out in new patches to try to hopefully preemptively take care of any issues. But I guess the best thing I could say is I'm sure we haven't heard the last of it, and the problem with, like you said, Paul, with letting somebody have access to the source code and have long-term access to it to do long-term testing is it could be a slow burn, and we might see something a long way later down the line.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know for sure what that'll be, but I'm a little nervous about it, for sure.
Well, that's why even the last pass breach was troubling, because they were able to take all those credentials offline, and then basically once they got your secret key, then they have everything in there that was part of your vault.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, obviously, that's very troubling. It's also not saying, you know, don't use a vault. It's just, I think we all agree that it wasn't the fact that LastPass was breached. It's how they reacted to the breach that created issues. They just weren't open and honest.
Yeah, and I think we're still waiting to see all of the fallout from that. I'm sure that they're still have credentials that they're sitting on.
Oh, from LastPass? Yeah.
Yeah.
If you want a masterclass in how not to handle disclosure about an incident, look to LastPass. And then just do... My advice is to do everything exactly the opposite of the way LastPass did it.
Agreed.
All right, next question that Tim had. What are your favorite resources for cybersecurity information and education?
This podcast.
Oh, yeah, perfect. Yeah, listen to The Effort Bucket. Great. All right, well, we can wrap this one up, everybody. The Effort Bucket is hosted by Ashley Keske.
On top of that, there's a fair amount of really good YouTube channels out there. It kind of depends on the topic. I think, you know, like if you're getting ready to study for a cert or you just want to understand some of the basics, I think Professor Messer is really good. And then I think one of the more colorful and entertaining channels that I like to watch every now and again is Network Chuck. And you really have to like coffee, but I think he does a really good job of telling that story too. But he always has fun projects and things he's working on, and tells the topic in a much more colorful and artistic way. So it makes it more interesting. So those are two.
I would second
me.
That. Yeah, Network Chuck is fantastic. That's one that I subscribe to and watch. John Hammond is also another good one.
Yeah,
he always digs into the new vulnerabilities and posts a video of how he's able to exploit.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, he'll stay up all night and demo something just to put it out.
I'll second his recommendation for him. I really enjoyed the video of his where he put up a public-facing server and asked people to hack it, but there was a little surprise for anybody that did so. And I won't spoil it, but I'll put a link in the show notes.
Another one, Hammond guested on this. The channel's called Scammer Payback, and this one's just, I find it entertaining. Basically, the premise is this group of folks, they've been doing this for several years, where they try to get scammers back, but they go to the point where they identify where they are. If there's closed circuit TV, they get access to the cameras, and then they'll watch the scammers as they, you know, pay them back. They try to identify their actual names, and they'll call them by their names. It was either last year or the year before. They did this several day long event called the People's Call Center, where they brought in volunteers to call these scammers directly. And so, like, the first day was reconnaissance, just getting a feel for things. And then they have this technique called reversal, where they'll allow the attacker to get access to their computer, but then they use that access to pivot and then get access to the scammer's computer and then work to delete files and basically pay them back. And so Hammond was actually one of the people that came into the People's Call Center to help. You know, they wrote a script that basically it was a spoof to try to get the scammer to open up their webcam or uncover it. And so it was a splash screen that would show up saying, your computer is about to overheat, you need to open your camera. And there were several scammers that fell for it.
That's great.
One poor gentleman actually fell asleep with his camera open. And so they had him up on a big screen, this, you know, dude sitting in his bed, boxers, fast asleep, and they were waiting for him to wake up so they could mess with him more. And this is just one episode. So Scammer Payback. That's a good one.
That's awesome.
More in terms of information, like in terms of keeping track of any bulletins, that sort of thing, I like to keep my finger on the pulse on Reddit, on r/sysadmin. I don't know what it is about the folks over there, but I've gotten notification from fellow sysadmins faster than I have from vendors in almost every instance of major security issues affecting, especially like the office suite, that sort of thing. It's like, oh, you've got to take your Exchange servers offline. Back when I still had Exchange servers. Paul probably remembers a couple of calls from me at like 3:30 in the afternoon. It's like, well, we need to do emergency maintenance tonight. It's like, well, cab doesn't meet for... I know, but it's got to happen right away. Talk yep. to whoever you need to.
Right.
Because as soon as everybody goes home, I'm running this patch.
Exactly. Other websites. So Bleeping Computer is a good one for news. Krebs on Security is another one.
Krebs is good. I've gotten some interesting stuff off Tom's Hardware. Which was surprising to me based on... I feel like that website kind of shifted its focus from where it started to where it is now.
Yeah, I haven't followed that one as much, but he was a decade ago or so. I watched that one quite a bit.
This is more on the educational side of websites, but TCM Security... Try Hack Me and Hack the Box are some good ones too for some hands-on security learning.
Mm-hmm.
They do a really, really nice job.
And it's not really a page turner, won't help you stay awake at night, but the Verizon every year has a cybersecurity report with some interesting statistics. Always good to refer back to. I always at least find some new information in that report. There's always some new exploit that I didn't realize was popping off quite as much as it was. But it turns out is would have kind of flown under the radar if I hadn't read about it in the Verizon report. Also a great source of statistics from a company that everybody recognizes when I need to talk to executives and managers and explain this is why I need to take an hour of everybody's time and do training, or I need to spend $10,000 on a new EDR platform or upgrades to our existing EDR platform for new security options, why I need to be more strict about multi-factor authentication and passwords and everything else. Like, well, these are the issues that are affecting companies all around the industry and how they're dealing with them and why you should be concerned about it, even if you're not in cybersecurity.
Now, CrowdStrike has a global threat report that they publish now too. That's got some really good information in it. And then the FBI has their internet crime report too. And they have a focused division that, you know, they're 100% focused on responding to complaints.
The Verizon report's free. The FBI report is free. Is the CrowdStrike report free as well?
Yep.
Yeah. So none of these require you to be a subscriber. Most of them will require you to at least put in an email address in order to receive a PDF copy, but that's all you need.
And then other podcasts, we've talked about Darknet Diaries. That one's always entertaining. And then Hacking Humans is another good one.
I love Hacking Humans. Yep, that's been one of my favorites. you should absolutely fill your podcatcher with plenty of other things to listen to after you've caught up on all the episodes of this podcast.
Another good one that's more focused on bug bounties. It's called Critical Thinking. Definitely a lot more technical, but a good one to dive into.
Who's that one by?
That one is by Justin Gardner and Joel Margolis.
Oh, cool.
Oh, yeah. Just kidding. I had to get one dad joke in. Actually, I shameless plug. This fall, since Kirkwood is starting our first ever cybersecurity and compliance program, led by me, among other faculty members as well, but I'm the lead instructor and program coordinator. So I would say Kirkwood is a good source for education. And if you want to enroll, take a look at the website. I think enrollment opens formally in late May, early June, and classes start in August. So 2-year AAS degree with articulation agreements, budding for 4-year schools as well. So it's very exciting.
Excellent. Great. Yeah, absolutely. Check that out. And then the last thing that Tim put in, which I think is the one that will generate the most discussion. With the many layoffs in the IT and cybersecurity industry, what are your predictions for 2024 and or 2025? More layoffs? A need to hire back some of those let go? Something else? This could also lead to what you feel the impacts will be to businesses because of the layoffs. Are they going to be able to maintain their current levels of cybersecurity on a leaner staff or not? Well, clearly Microsoft's not doing great with their leaner staff.
Ouch. Shots fired.
And there's room for improvement at Ivanti as well.
I mean, there's room for improvement everywhere. I think it is an election year, and the market's still trying to figure out where it needs to be post-COVID. Because everyone really leaned out during COVID, and obviously, that's not anything that any firm could plan for. And then I feel like things started to feel better even back into 22. But now with, you know, we still have the Ukraine war, we have the Israel war, that always shakes up the market. And now that we have our election year, everyone just is trying to figure out, I think, where they want to be and where they need to be. That's just a global market, you know, opinion. I think when you look at IT and cyber, companies are just trying to lean out and see what they really need. And I think that makes it harder for leadership positions because, you know, if you're leaning out, you've got someone there that's leading a group, you're probably not going to get rid of that leader and then backfill that right away. That leader has to build up their group and figure out what it needs to look like. That was a whole lot of words with no meaning.
I saw somebody point out, rightly, I think, that this isn't the first time we've seen a big shakeup in terms of employment at some of the big tech companies. Probably won't be the last, but it's been highly cyclical in that area of business before and probably will be again. There's not really any reason to expect that not to be the case for, you know, projects to wrap up, fiscal years to close, and then people get shuffled out of positions, and then new initiatives start up, and then they have to bring a bunch of people right back on. That kind of seems to be a repeating pattern in Silicon Valley that happens over and over and over again. I don't think nothing seems to be like the dot-com crash of years gone by where we just all of a sudden have a bunch of people out of work and with nothing to do. I haven't really seen a lot of evidence of that.
Yeah, I think another thing COVID did is it really shined a light on people's natural tendency to be lazy. And if you're just handing these people free money and not requiring them to work, then the request to return to work is, it's a heavier lift, I think, for the majority of people. And like I tell my kids and others that, you know, that are looking to enter the workforce, I said, you kind of have it made, because COVID has created openings that normally may not be there. And employers are just looking for people that A, want to be there, and B, are effective. And if you can show that, you can write your own ticket. if you look at cyber resources in a way, it's a little bit different though, because you have all these layoffs, so you have a pretty good resource pool of theoretically skilled workers with experience. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, there's some entrepreneurs out there that are trying to come up with ways to use that pool, because it's available, and normally it wouldn't be there. So we might very well see a fair amount of newer startups, or boutique services that normally wouldn't be offered because they have access to resources that maybe they normally wouldn't. What do you think, Ashley? Because, you know, Alex and I are just, we're hayseeds from Iowa, so you know, we might be a little bit secluded.
Yeah, what's going on in the tech center?
The market in Denver, and surrounding Denver, I guess Denver metro area is a more appropriate term, but it seems to be booming. There are a lot of jobs, depending on what you want to go into, that are available. I don't see Denver being hit as much as other cities, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the thing that bothers me about the market, especially from a leadership perspective, and I met a gentleman a couple weeks ago. I won't name him because I don't know that he wants to be named, but he spent several decades in a CISO role, was very effective, and now he's focusing on some other things that are more passion projects for himself. But he and I talked, and I just said, you know, I was in the job market for over a year, and I think I applied to over 1,000 jobs, both on LinkedIn, on corporate web pages, in person, all those kinds of things. And I think I only had 3 interviews. And I voiced my frustration with him, and he says, Paul, the problem isn't you, it's the market. And it's the approach to bring people into this recruiting process. He's like, it's a mess. There's skilled people out there that cannot get in front of recruiting teams, that cannot get appropriate interviews. And some of it is, you know, it's very easy to impersonate someone and, you know, apply and have it be fake. At the same time, a lot of these companies, when you look at the job postings, they're looking for unicorns. It's like, mm-hmm. I want someone it's an entry-level position, but you need 5 years of experience and 3 certifications, a bachelor's degree, and you have to have industry experience. Like, huh? Does that even exist?
No.
And then, so I think for leaders, it's a lean and tough market. But I think for the more technical resources, the market looks really good. You know, Forbes is suggesting an average for the next 5 to 10 years, a 30% increase in job openings year over year. Which is, you know, fantastic. I look at that and think that's going to be really good for this industry. And it's needed because, you know, we're honestly fighting a global battle. I look at this as an opportunity for folks like me. I couldn't serve in the military because of health issues. And I look at the fact that I'm part of cyber as a way to be part of that, the good guys, you know, and how do we prevent attacks and things like that. And citing the IBM report, or not IBM, the FBI report, their crimes report for last year. The total so in 2023, the report states that they had almost 900,000 complaints registered, which was a 10% increase from the year before. There were $12.5 billion in losses reported. The one caveat they have there is that these numbers are conservative. And one thing they cite there is that when they infiltrated the Hive ransomware, and when they unpacked that, they discovered that only 20% of those victims even reported being a victim. So if you look at 12.5 billion, you know, maybe 30 to 40% more than that, possibly. But I did a little bit of a trend analysis, and the report goes back to 2019. And in 2019, the total losses reported were 3.5 billion. Fast forward to 2023, overall losses were 12.5 billion. So on average, year over year, you're talking about a 39% increase year over year, which tells me that by 2030, we'll have reported $123 billion in losses from e-crime. And to put that in perspective, that's $100 billion more than the highest global GDP, which is the United States at $23 billion. It's also more than the top five combined, which would be US, China, Germany, Japan, and India. Those five GDPs reported last year together is only, I think, about $50 billion. So, I mean, this is big money. And there just needs to be resources out there to become more proactive and not as reactive.
Anybody ever think we got in the wrong line of business?
You want to be a criminal? Maybe don't announce it here.
I mean, I don't necessarily want to. I just...
Become a criminal to steal that money back.
Yeah. Right. And your fee is 10% of 10% of funds recuperated.
There we go.
That sounds pretty noble. You put it that way. I can work with that.
Wasn't there a reporter that was interviewing someone like a couple weeks ago that like stepped on his face, said something like, "Well, can't you just take some of the money from what you guys have recouped and pay off whatever?" And the person he interviewed just looked at him like, "No, that's illegal, dumbass."
I'm going to have to go look that up.
Yeah, if you find it, let me know. We'll put it in the show description.
Okay.
Oh, kind of bringing it back to the layoffs and predictions, I think one thing that helps folks a lot is networking. I think we often sometimes underestimate, you know, local meetups or even just virtual meetups and those connections and how they can help you get into, at a minimum, get your resume in front of the person hiring.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I know I didn't give that activity the credence it was due earlier on in my career. I was like, oh no, as much as I might want to just go home and watch movies and play video games, it's probably important to build that social network out quite a bit more. Because, yeah, a lot of the opportunities that have come up over the years have been in large part due to some of the connections that I've made, and not necessarily the ones that I've made while I was on the clock either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so to quote Forbes, as far as the job outlook, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor and Statistics, or BLS, they're projecting cyber jobs will grow by 32% from 2022 to 2032. And that equates to almost 17,000 annual job openings. CyberSeek, which is another really good resource for information on the job market, they reported almost 600,000 cybersecurity openings between September of 22 and August of 23. So there are plenty of jobs out there. I think that there is an opportunity in this space to do a better job of matchmaking and saying, and maybe it needs to be pivoted to the person versus the hiring company, almost like a Match.com, where you say, hey, you know, I have 15 years of experience in Department of Defense, and I've done A, B, C, X, Y, Z. This is what I'm looking for. Oh, well, here's 15 companies that have jobs that match your profile. We'll get you hooked up with an interview.
Did you just create our next job opportunity?
There you go.
Sounds pretty good to me.
We need to come up with an app now.
If anyone would like to fund this app, we can be reached at
theappitbucket@gmail.com.
So I'm steadfast, and I think the market's it's going to continue to grow. Unfortunately, it's because of crime. I really, you know, if I could look at company leaders in the face and tell them, you know, I think if you know if you're not at least spending 5% of your overall revenue a year on something related to protection, you're underspending. And I really want them to focus on people and not tools. You've got to find the right people that are passionate about it, that want to protect your environment and turn it into a differentiator and not a, you know, a nuisance. If it's done right, it doesn't have to be overly expensive. And you also really focus on what your core competencies are. Like if you're a widget builder, that doesn't mean you have to be an expert in cyber to protect your company. There's plenty of people out there that will come in and help you. That's one thing I've told a story a number of times over the past couple months, is that I feel like in my experience, when you're a smaller company, you do things internally because you feel like you have to. But you know, we're in a space now where you can go buy good software and good things, or lease them, right? And help use that to help accelerate what you're doing, but you don't have to be the expert in that thing.
Yeah. I also think, I was talking with a coworker earlier this week, that there was this attitude, like, late 90s, that, like, any system you had, even simple systems like inventory control, you had to build everything yourself. Everything had to be custom built internal software. And that's not the case anymore. And in fact, you're going to spend more time and internal resources from your employees, which equates to more money either through just the cost of paying those employees wages, or the lost costs of the system being down and not doing what it's supposed to as it ages over time. It's just so much better, where possible, to replace some of those bespoke systems with a dedicated piece of software that's designed to do that task. And for the most part, there is one. I'm going to say, the vast majority of business cases out there. There might be still some that are doing some off-the-wall thing that nobody's ever heard of that really needs their own production software because just nothing else will cut it. But for the most part, there's probably an enterprise system that will do what you need.
Mm-hmm.
As far as some of these corporations that laid people off being able to maintain their current levels of cybersecurity on a leaner staff, I'm going to cynically say they probably can, just because it seems like cybersecurity is an afterthought, even at some of the larger corporations, which is always kind of disheartening, but there's so many instances where, how do I say this? I don't expect any company these days not to have a cybersecurity incident of some kind or another, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just getting to the point that it's like, eventually your time rolls around. And it's no longer because you necessarily did something egregiously wrong. But when you do hear about the big guys getting in trouble. It usually is because they did something egregiously wrong. Like, they have a public-facing account where the password is password or password one. Like, it's ridiculous how
elementary...
Yeah, it's ridiculous how elementary these mistakes are. Like, it never turns out to be, oh, somebody exploited remote code execution in an unpatched firewall that somebody had forgotten about in data center 9,000 of 15,000 somewhere across the United States. It's always elementary school stuff that, like, my mom doesn't get wrong because I won't let her. And I just don't get it. I just don't get it. So that's my cynical take. I'm going to say, are they going to be able to maintain their current levels of cybersecurity, their levels of piss-poor cybersecurity? Yeah, absolutely. I don't see how it could get much worse.
Isn't broken access control still the top 10? Or top...
In OWASP?
OWASP?
I haven't looked at that this reset. I feel like it is, yeah. I think out of the jobs that are out there, identity and access management, they're paying big bucks for that. And I'll sound like an idiot with this. I don't know why. Like, is it complicated? Am I undermining that work? I don't feel like that should be a top paid job.
I don't think it's overly complex, but I think it's niche enough that only certain people are going to be passionate about it enough to do it.
So it's like actuarial accounting, you know?
Yeah.
I when I was looking at, you know, stuff for this, I was like, why is that being, I mean, you can go look at some of the postings out there, like $200,000-$300,000 a year for IAM. Like, geez, okay, sign me up. That might be fun. Or not. I mean, if shit breaks every other day.
Personally, I don't want to manage it, but
here's a shit sandwich, put some ketchup on it and we'll make you feel better.
Yeah. Exactly.
That did IAM did come up in the Internet Crimes Report and the CrowdStrike report too, as one of the that's new big business credential harvesting, where there are companies out there that will I say companies, but they're not really companies. There are criminals out there that will go get credentials and then turn around and sell them. Oddly enough, the going rate for a set of creds is just a couple hundred dollars. So they're not selling it for a ton.
Yeah, I was at a Colorado Springs OWASP chapter meetup a couple weeks ago where Jason Haddix demoed how easy it is to go on the dark web and purchase credentials. And that's something that ethical hackers will, you know, when they're doing their pen tests, will go take a look and purchase and run through those credentials for a company. Scary how easy it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that password with your dog's name in it that you keep using, you should probably change it.
Well, but in my defense, my dog's name is curly bracket lowercase p exclamation point 8UYTRLXG.
LMNOP.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's kind of okay.
It's a little more complex.
Yeah.
How does your vet pronounce that name?
Curly. For short.
Curly. Nice. Yeah, so I think, you know, in short, from, I guess, just job market wise, there will continue to be jobs. It's still a hot space to be in. My concern is really just around how companies are approaching it. I still feel like the majority of them out there are looking for a silver bullet. Like, we're going to go buy these three tools and then we'll be fine. And I mean, there are a number of local companies that they're very successful, but I think that they're almost bullish to the point where it's like, we're not in the XYZ space, therefore we're not a target. You know, so then the question is, well, what event could occur that would put you out of business? And that's always an interesting conversation. Because sometimes it's not data. It's just, well, can you survive being down for 2 days?
Yeah.
What does that look like? So it's always interesting to try to build demand and then at the same time not cause a panic. The other thing that I think we didn't touch on, though, is just AI and how that's going to play in all this, too. And, you know, when I say AI, it's the whole broad spectrum of all the things. And I don't see that replacing jobs. I see that creating more opportunities for professionals that really dig into it and can make it purposeful.
Once the dust settles, I optimistically like to think that's true. In the short term, I don't know if that'll necessarily be the case. I think, like, kind of like the standard progression of a lot of technologies, it'll be this first step is this thing is new and exciting and not a lot of people know about it except for the early adopters and the highly technically minded. And then kind of the next step is where we are now is much more widespread adoption and everybody becomes interested in it. And if you go home for a holiday to celebrate with your family, you probably have to talk about it with them. And then like the immediate next step after that, almost all the time seems to be that the C-suite gets a hold of it. And it's like, how many people can we replace with this technology? Like right away. And then the very next thing is it turns out, oh, the technology wasn't actually able to fix all of our issues. And it turns out human beings have some inherent value after all. And then we have to backpedal really hard and bring people back on board. So I'm going to optimistically choose to agree with you that that'll be the case in, say, 2.5 years. In the short term, I think a lot of people are going to get dumped by short-sighted, bottom-line-minded executives who are going to think, oh, yeah, we can replace this tool with an AI, and then are going to be in for a rude awakening when they discover, what do you mean somebody has to implement the AI? What do you mean it has to be able to access our data? What do you mean somebody has to tell it what to do? Like, what do you mean it's not just digital people sitting inside the computer just doing work of their own initiative?
Yeah, I think another thing for our listeners, I feel like this would be common sense, but it still has to be said. So when you go, and now you look at Chrome and Edge, they embed ChatGPT in it. I think it's Edge that has a lot of the ChatGPT-4 model for free for now with Copilot. Just be very cautious with how you use that, especially in a work environment. Because, anything that you submit to a prompt or that you attach to that, that then becomes part of the model. Yeah. And other people then can take advantage of that. Those that are more nefarious will figure out ways to actually get access to that proprietary information and, potentially create problems for your organization. So I think if most companies that have policies, it obviously is not going to stay AI in it, but it just says, something to the effect that you should not submit proprietary information into a public environment. Chat engines and these LLMs are part of that. So just be very, very cautious with how you interact with it for work.
All right. Good discussions all around. Always appreciated. But we always like to leave off with a little bit of a lighter topic. And so I'll ask if anybody has seen anything good lately. Ashley, how about you? Seen anything good?
I have not lately.
How about a total solar eclipse?
Oh, that's true. I did go back to Ohio to see the solar eclipse and drove a little bit ways north to see totality.
Was
and
it
that
cloudy?
Was really cool. It was a little cloudy, but we were still able to see totality, like to be able to look at the sun without any glasses on.
That's cool.
And then have the sunset, right? You know, 360 all around you.
That's cool. I thought about doing it, but ultimately didn't. And then it turned out to be, like, anywhere I could have gotten was, like, 100% overcast anyway. So it was like, I guess I'm glad I didn't take the time to try and drive out there. But
It was worth it. It was fun. Have a really cool picture from it. I'll have to share with you guys.
Oh, yeah.
We haven't finished it yet, but it's a limited series called The Staircase. Basically,
I heard about that.
Yeah, it starts out. It's one of the guys from what's that musical with ABBA? Why can't I think of that?
Mamma Mia.
Thank you. One of the three dads from that is in it. He's the main character.
Pierce Brosnan?
Nope, not him.
So one of the other ones.
One of the other two. Good try. So the plot of this is has nothing to do with ABBA. It does involve a staircase, hence the name. It starts out with a crime scene where this family, they just finished dinner. Everyone had left. The parents are at the house, and then somehow the mom dies, and she dies on a staircase. And so the first, I think it's 10 or 12 episodes, the first five episodes are kind of building up to the trial and how this thing theoretically happened or didn't happen. And there's all kinds of different scenarios that play out. And it's really good because they get you thinking one way and then they get you thinking another way. And it's, you know, all kinds of twists and turns and stuff. And I feel really bad for the actress, though, because I think they show her dying like five different times. And it's really graphic. It's like, damn, that, you know, you're on a staircase and you're choking on your own blood and then you cough it up on the wall. And like, no, we're not going to have you do that once. We're going to have you do that like 30 times just to film this movie. You know, poor excellent thing. She does really well. Like, it gets better every time.
Wow.
I could have sworn there was like an actual documentary series about this same case because it's based on a true story, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we're at episode 6 or 7, so I don't know how it ends. But thus far, it's been good.
Yeah. And if it turns out to be like a monster that lives under the stairs, just reached out and grabbed her. And M. Night Shyamalan wrote this thing, and then I'll be like, oh, I was wrong. This probably wasn't based on a true story after all.
He has a new movie coming out. I just saw I saw a trailer for it. I didn't see the trailer itself, though.
Yeah, I saw that too. And I was like, I was looking at it, and I was like, this, I feel like they weren't very subtle about the set design. I don't know if that's...
Wasn't his last one a bomb? The Cabin?
A lot of his ones have been bombs. Like, I've never seen anybody fall from grace so far and so fast as M. Night Shyamalan. You're like, oh man, this guy directed this movie, The Sixth Sense. You gotta see it. This guy's gonna be great. And then everybody saw everything else he did and they were like, never mind. It's not gonna be so good after all.
I like the one where the guy has schizophrenia. Split.
Hmm.
I don't think I've seen that one.
It's actually pretty damn good.
But then I remember he made that movie about the beach that makes everybody get old.
Called like Old.
I don't know why I couldn't remember that. And then... There was another one. Of course, the critically acclaimed Avatar: The Last Airbender live-action movie was the lowest-rated film on Rotten Tomatoes for a long time until somebody was like, "Nah, I can make something worse." And yeah,
the best line in the movie Split is, "I ate a hot dog."
Damn it, now I'm going to have to watch the movie just to find out what the context of that is.
James McAvoy is the main character, and he is, I think he's in a mental institution, and I think he has like 30-some-odd personas in his head, and you see a good majority of them.
Wow.
Then eventually he turns into a beast. Like, the beast is the main character. And this, of course, is the third movie in the trilogy, otherwise known as Glass and Unbreakable.
Oh, okay.
So, it is entertaining, though. I ate a hot dog.
Well, all right, then. For myself, it's several years old by now. It's no longer on the air. But I picked up a series called AP Bio.
Is that a class?
I mean, it is, but it's also, it's also the name of this, NBC show. And it's, stars, Glenn Howerton, when he took that little break from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, this was what he was doing. And he plays basically the same character. He's a disgraced philosophy professor from Harvard who lost out on tenure. And so he finds himself aimless for a year. And so he goes to be a substitute teacher for advanced placement biology. Despite the fact that that's not what his background is or anything. And, so he's ostensibly there to teach biology class, but he never teaches the kids any biology and basically just has the kids, working on ways to take down his former rival, who wrote a much more successful philosophy book. Absurdist and hilarious and great.
That's funny. AP Bio. Yeah. You said it's not on anymore, so how can we watch it?
It's streaming on Peacock.
Okay.
Yeah. But I think it ended in 2020 or 2021, so.
For what it's worth, any Peacock subscribers, I have found going and rewatching old wrestling from the 80s is rather entertaining.
Never got into wrestling.
It has all the old WWF before they got into the trademark dispute with the World Wildlife Foundation.
Should have just settled it in the ring.
Just
bring one of those pandas in and let them...
No, mascot wait. Wrestling?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. Going back to the original WrestleManias and Royal Rumbles and whatnot. Gotta love nice. It. Back Ooh. When it was pure and not fake like it is today.
Exactly. Well, thanks everybody for joining us for another episode of the F It Bucket. Hope you have a great couple of weeks until the next episode. And until next time, remember, balance is key. Otherwise, you'd fall on your ass. The F It Bucket is hosted by Ashley Keskey, Paul Ruffalo, and me, Alex Kalegos. We're edited and mixed by Alex Gallegos. Our theme song is Limit 70 by Kevin MacLeod. Thank you so much to everybody who's left a rating so far on Apple Podcasts. We see you, we appreciate you, and it's people like you who are helping drive other new listeners our way so we can keep producing new episodes. And hey, if you haven't yet, it's not too late. Leave a review if you want to, leave a rating if you want to, whatever you want to do, it'll help us. And you know what they say, everybody's got an opinion. I think that's how the whole saying goes, right? Well, if you've got an opinion, this is the time for you to share it with us, right? Do you agree with us? Well, hey, we like our ego stoked. And if you don't agree with us, that's fine too. Tell us why. We accept your tweets. We accept your DMs. We accept your emails. And hey, who knows? We might discuss your message on the show. just like we did with Tim Lansing's email this week. Thank you, Tim. And we're pretty much everywhere you can think of. You can come find us on social media. We're on X at the Effit Bucket. That's EFF. Our subreddit is r/TheEffitBucket, and you can email us directly at TheEffitBucket@gmail.com. Our next episode comes out on May 9th, and we hope that you'll be there with us. But until then, these three enthusiastic amateurs with a microphone and a dream are signing off.
Good to go.
Sweet. Oh, hang on. I know what I forgot. What was the thing? You said it at the end of the last episode.
Balance is key, otherwise you fall on your ass.
Balance is key, otherwise you fall on your ass. That's right. I gotta remember that. I gotta type that into the notes. So that'll become our thing now. Balance is key. Otherwise, you fall on your ass. That could have been a disaster.
Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah, would have fallen on my ass. All right, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right.